All right, we're in James, end of chapter 1, and let's go ahead and go to verse 26. Again, you know, as James is working his way through, he kind of has a tendency to move from one topic to the other. And so this doesn't read like a novel, right, or a narrative. It's more like the book of Proverbs, where he's hitting different areas, different topics at us. So, if we get to verse 26, he writes, "If anyone thinks he is religious and does not bridle his tongue but deceives his heart, this person's religion is worthless. Religion that is pure and undefiled before God the Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their affliction, and to keep oneself unstained from the world." So he's moved from, you know, the previous verse about being doers of the word. And so now he's going to talk about a practical area of our life, or some areas of our life, where we need to show a practical faith in us. And so he brings up the topic of religion, and he talks about those who would be religious, what they aren't and what they are. The first area in verse 26 is he brings up the topic of the tongue. Now, when we get to chapter 3, he'll spend more time on this topic. But when he's talking about the tongue, what does that stand for? What is that a symbol of? Yeah, that's exactly right. You're all great. It's the way we talk, right? It's the words we use, how we use them, when we use them, when we don't use them, right? It's the way we communicate with one another. And so when he says bridle the tongue, of course, he'll bring that illustration back up in chapter 3. He'll talk about three different symbols of the wickedness of the tongue at times, right? And he uses the bridle in a horse's mouth. He uses the rudder on a ship, and he uses a flame that will kindle a large forest fire. We'll save that discussion for chapter 3, but he's going to introduce it here. And so he says, if in order to be religious, what's necessary on your part in order to be considered religious?
Visit.
What?
Visitations.
No, before that. That's the next verse. You've got to have some control over this small member of your body, right? But as he'll say in chapter 3, it's a untamable fire almost. He says that in order to have religion, or to call yourself a religious person that has something worthwhile, he says you need to be able to bridle your tongue. It's interesting that he puts in there the person who doesn't bridle their tongue. He says that person does what? They deceive what? They're deceiving themselves. They're lying to themselves. So if you're a Christian, And yet you get involved in gossip, are you bridling your tongue? Is that a bridled tongue? So what does James say your religion is? It's worthless. The way you talk about your brothers and sisters, the way you talk about other people, it reflects on your relationship with God, on your religion, on your worship, on your service to God. And so he introduces again the topic here of controlling the tongue. And then in 27, he moves on to what Miss Regina had alluded to earlier. He gives us three things that religion should do. What should religion do?
It
what? That's true, but
or
Okay, he gives us, he says, visit orphans and widows, one. Or you might say those are two. And all right. And again, is this an exhaustive list? No. One commentator mentioned maybe what James is doing here is really pointing at the Pharisees. And I'll show you what I mean. Let's go to Luke 20:47. Go to Luke 27, Luke 20, verse, let's start at verse 45. And let's look at the text here. Luke 20, verse 45, this is the English Standard. Here Luke writes, "And in the hearing of all the people, he said, Jesus, to his disciples, 'Beware of the scribes who like to walk around in long robes, and love greetings in the marketplace, and the best seats in the synagogue, and the places of honor at feasts.'" What does that look like? What are they trying to portray?
Importance.
And let's connect it to a verse we're looking at. They want to have the appearance of being very religious. And then he goes on in verse 47. So that's the way they appear. This is who they are, who devour widows' houses and devour widows' houses for a pretense, make long prayers. They will receive greater condemnation. So, pretty alarming verse, especially if you're a Pharisee, right? If you're one of those who likes to seem religious. But in reality, what are they doing?
They're deceiving
themselves. And he says they're devouring widows' homes. Instead of helping those in need, they're actually causing great harm to them. Now, he doesn't say here exactly what he means by devouring their homes. But in some way, they were depriving them of help and in their time of need, right? They're keeping back from them the help that was necessary. So this may be what James is trying to attack in James 1:27. It is interesting. He points out that specific act of help. Now, we can't know exactly because we can't know the mind of the Holy Spirit or James, only all we know is what they write. But this may be what he's trying to call attention to. Remember, James is writing pretty early on, around 50 A.D. It's before the destruction of the temple. So, and at this time, a vast majority of Christians come out of Judaism, so they're still interacting a lot with the Jewish people. And James is living where?
In Jerusalem.
So,
aren't they running to the ones, they are scattered throughout, you call it the persecution?
The dispersion, right. That's back at the beginning of the chapter, but his audience, I believe, would mainly be Jewish Christians. So, but we know from other texts that what God expects of us is more than just three acts, right? To visit orphans and widows and to keep oneself unstained from the world. Go over to Matthew 25. We get another list here from Jesus. Looks a little different. When you get down to verse number 31, we have the picture of the final judgment. Now, the prior text were some parables that indicate this idea of being ready for judgment day. You have in verses 1 through 13 is the parable of the 10 virgins, right? You remember, you have those who are wise and those who are unwise, those who are prepared and those who are not prepared for the bridegroom. Then you have the one Jody had alluded to even this morning, the parable of the talents. The first one is about preparation. The second one is about using your gifts. So you get down to verse 31, he's actually going to talk about the judgment scene. We won't read all this just for time's sake, but you have in verse 31, Jesus, the Son of Man, sitting on the throne of judgment. And who are gathered before him? You have two groups, right? What two groups of people? Yeah, you got the angels, but the people, like
the sheep and the goats.
And that's how he labels them, right? And he's already, if you go to John's gospel, he talks about being the great shepherd, right? And what is he doing here? Like a shepherd does with his sheep and goats, he separated them, right? And you have one group on, so which side are y'all on? This is my left. Are you on the left and the sheep over here? Or if your perspective, it's the opposite, right? Which perspective do you want? But he has the sheep on his right and the goats on his left. And so what's the contrast between those two groups? How does he contrast their behavior? Who? What's the contrast he's making between them? How are they different? Yeah. Well, the sheep are those who acted wisely, those who used their talents. You used the two previous parables, right? It's those who did what? Let's go to verse 35. He says, verse 35, for I was hungry and you gave me food. These are the sheep, right? He's applauding them. I was thirsty and you gave me drink. I was a stranger and you welcomed me in. I was naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me. Then the righteous will answer him saying, Lord, when did we see you in any of those situations? And they kind of go back through each of those. And of course, what's his point? When did they do those things? When they did it for the least of my brothers, right? So that list is a little different than James's list, but I think the point's the same, isn't it? The point's still the same, right? You're acting benevolently to others who are in need. And then, of course, as you keep reading 41, you have the goats doing the opposite. They didn't do any of those things. They weren't preparing themselves for judgment because they had no what? No good fruits. They weren't being fruitful in their lives. They weren't visiting those in need. They weren't giving clothes to those who needed it. They weren't visiting the sick. They weren't going into the prisons, you know, to help their brothers and sisters. They weren't doing the things necessary. So what's the point of all this? Is it just to do good works? Is that the point of it? Well, let me give you one more verse and then we'll discuss it. Let's go to Matthew 7. And while we have to be careful with how we view this. So if you don't mind, let's go to Matthew 7. Now let's go to verse 21. Let's just start reading at 21. So it's Matthew 7, 21. This is the English Standard Translation. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but the one who what? Does the will of my Father who is in heaven. On that day, I think he's focusing on Judgment Day, they will say, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name, cast out demons in your name, and do many mighty works in your name? Then I will declare to you, I never knew you. Depart from me, you workers of lawlessness. And when you start to collect all of those texts, and there's others, of course, we could look at, but let's just, for this study, we're thinking about these. What's the point we draw away from all of this? They're all talking about, you know, religion that is acceptable to God. James says pure and undefiled religion. Jesus in Matthew's gospel is looking at the judgment day, right? They're being judged. Same thing in James, right? You're judging, God's judging your religion. What's the point we take away? What is expected of us? What is God looking for? Okay, I set all that up. Y'all got to give me something back.
What he is looking for is that we do good works in his name, but we have to obey, be obedient. Like obey the gospel. If you don't obey the gospel, you out there doing all of this good work. I know the gospel had to be brought up.
Somewhat, yeah. Somebody help Miss Virginia out there. So, with all this in mind, what is God's expectation? Because we all want to be ready for the judgment, right? These all talk about being judged by God, right? What is God looking for? How do we be prepared? How do we get ourselves ready? How do we not end up in Matthew 7? As those who, Jesus says, I never knew you, depart from me, you workers of lawlessness. So how do we not find ourselves there?
Not doing those things in their own mind. Now I know that they, like taking the stranger meeting, all of those other things, even going back to where he said, didn't we do these things in Jesus' name, apart from being in the news. But a lot of times if we are doing these things for outwardly praise, it almost kind of voids it out, because we're doing it for the praise of men.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think she's hitting on the target there, right? Notice again, so he gives us these lists. Is it about a list?
No.
Right? You want to, I know Boy Scouts, you know, you'd want different merit badges. You get different merit badges, which will give you, unlock other badges for you, right? You'd do certain things to achieve a badge. Right. And it's about knocking those things off the list. You're in school and you're writing a research paper, and they give you a rubric, a grading rubric, and you'd want to make sure you checked off all those areas. Christianity's not about checking off a list. Right? It's not about that. I do think, though, Yolanda is hitting on it. Let's go back to Matthew 7 just for a second. Notice their response. They say, did we not prophesy in your name, cast out demons in your name, and do many mighty works? In all of those things, where's the focus? It's on them, right? They're proving by their response that what they're doing was not about Jesus. It was about themselves. Their religion, according to James, is one that is worthless, has no value, it's empty, it's vain. We don't want our religion to be vain or empty. Well, who are we seeking to please by the way we live our lives? Ourselves, someone else, or God? God has to be the focus, right? He's got to be the one we're seeking to please, not ourselves and nobody else. He is the one that will judge us. And so we go back to James 1. Pure and undefiled, right, unmarred religion before God is what? To visit orphans and widows in their affliction. Not to get selfish gain, not so you can make yourself look good in amongst the church, right, so you can come back and broadcast, look at all the great things I'm doing in my life. But you help them because you're trying to seek after God's approval and to do good to his people and to keep oneself unstained from the world. So that really sets us up as we move through the rest of the book. We're seeking after undefiled religion. Well, what do we need to do? Well, James is going to hit some things as we get into chapters 2 and following, are some things as Christians we ought to keep in mind. So as we go into chapter 2, we're going to have longer sections. It's not going to be the quick one verse Proverbs kind of thing. He's going to cover topics in a more broad or more deep way as we move through. And so chapter 2, verse 1, he's going to begin to talk about the sin of partiality. Lisa?
So that's really hard for me because, you know, I don't go to church every Sunday. Mm-hmm. And I don't have to the prison and, you know, go and do Bible studies. And I don't, like, I know that Turner and Charlene, they go and take people and go and take people, like, food and go to Walmart and get everything they need. Like, it's hard. So as a woman to go and just, I'm not going to let somebody come in the house. I mean, so it's harder now to do those kinds of things that we should be doing.
Well, again, I don't think it's about a checklist, right? So we check off that we went to the prison or whatever. I think what he's saying is we need to be actively seeking to help others in some way, right? It's not about a specific act. But it's about, in general, what are you doing to reach others? How are you trying to help them? How are you trying to help those who are in need? So, yeah.
I think it's more of like if the opportunity arises to help someone, mm-hmm. you should do it if you mm-hmm. are able to. Like if I see a homeless person and I ask, hey, are you hungry? And they're like, yes, and I offer to buy them food. Or if you see someone without a coat, you offer them your coat, or you say, hey, let me buy you a coat, you know, if they're struggling. Mm-hmm. That type of thing. Like, if the opportunity arises, you do good.
Mm-hmm.
If you work in a doctor's office and people come to see you, you're like, you're not visiting the sick, but they're visiting you and you're helping them.
Yeah, and that's one way we can help. The careful part about that is we're getting a paycheck, right? So we just need to be careful. I mean, it's good stuff. And doctors and nurses and all PAs do great works and great things for people.
Paycheck to talk to them and give them sympathy.
Yes.
About
going the extra mile, right?
Bringing an extra blanket or, you know, bringing them something from the outside.
Trying to do the bare minimum.
Yeah,
and those things are good, and I think those are the kind of things he's trying to get us to think about, right?
Yeah.
It's just not about doing the bare minimum to get into heaven.
Lisa, she chose a profession, so she can help people, right? If it's not like me, you know, kind of like...
Well, we're not downgrading your career path. I mean, you can go do a career path, but it's talking about... You know, I think what Brianna said is right. It's about who the people you're interacting with on a day-to-day basis. Are you seeking to help people? Now, this is just one example I can think of real quick. Is let's say you live in an apartment building and you know there's a guy down there on the first floor. If I go out that door, he's going to be there. And so there's an opportunity, but I say, well, today I'm not going to take that opportunity. I'm going to go out the other door, right? You're avoiding the opportunity. But when they come up, we try to do what we can to help people along the way. And I think that's what he's trying to tell us. And we don't do it to be seen, but to please him. Becky?
Well, I was going to say, we need Christians to be in every profession and on every
yes.
floor of that apartment building so that there can be opportunities that are not missed. I mean, you know, I think about, Rogers, like I was just hearing about a surgeon group this week too, and I think surgeons are sometimes the most untalked to about religion because they have very strong choice of personalities and words and decisions, things that they say out loud. But this group had actually started up with a small Bible study with just two or three of them, and like two had joined that people. Like, can you believe they go to Bible study? Because and now they've really changed what they listen to in the OR, and they've changed their vocabulary, and they've changed this and that. So, I mean, we can have an impact on no matter what people, no matter what profession we're in.
Yeah, and it's about having that impact for God, right? It's about being impactful. Yes, sir.
So, from a fireman's perspective, Mark, I appreciate this. And being in a leadership role where I am, most firemen, they wanna check a box. So they want a pretty streamlined SOG policy to say, all right, I've done this and I've done that. I want a fireman that's just gonna make good decisions. I give him some guidelines, I give him some boundaries, but I want him to make good decisions on his own without him having to just go through and check a box and say, hey, I'm done. You know, I've done everything you said, I'm done for the day. You know, I want him to, again, you know, just make good decisions in general.
So. Yeah, that's exactly, I think, what he's trying to point at. It's like you're going in the doctor's office and you have somebody behind you that's struggling to walk in. You just walk in and ignore them, or are you there trying to offer help and assistance? Right? You're at a store, you're at Walmart, and you're dealing with the people who work there. How do you deal with them? How do you interact? Are you that grumpy person, that customer who comes in to not make their day better but to make it worse? Right? How do we react to difficult situations? Hey, I'm as guilty as anybody sometimes getting aggravated at somebody because the situation didn't go the way I wanted it to, and reacting in a poor way, right? As Christians, I think those are the little things we do on a day-to-day basis that can change somebody's day. Saying a kind word to somebody who's struggling, maybe at work, right? I think those things go a long way as well. So there's lots of different ways we find to interact with people and to help them out as best we can. And I want to start chapter 2 and we'll quit. But any other comments about that? All right, so let's go to chapter 2. I do want to read this section. The first 7 verses, we'll just start to look at it. But this is a little longer text that's dealing with a single issue. He says, my brothers, show no partiality as you hold the faith of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Lord of glory. For if a man wearing a gold ring and fine clothing comes into your assembly, and a poor man in shabby clothes, a shabby clothes also comes in. And if you pay attention to the one who wears the fine clothing and say, you sit here in a good place, while you say to the poor man, you stand over there or sit down at my feet, have you not then made distinctions among yourselves and become judges with evil thoughts? Listen, my beloved brothers, has not God chosen those who are poor in the world to be rich in faith and heirs of the kingdom, which he has promised to those who love him? But you have dishonored the poor man. Are not the rich the ones who oppress you, the ones who drag you into court? Are they not the ones who blaspheme the honorable name by which you were called? Partiality, it's a small thing, but has big consequences. How we encounter other people, how we make prejudgments about them. What does he say here? You've become judges with evil thoughts. Ever look at somebody and make a judgment on them based on how they look? He says that we have to be careful with that. Do we demonstrate, that kind of prejudice in our life, where we prejudice ourselves against people because of the way they talk or the way they look? Do we ever grade people on their worthiness to hear the gospel? I know that person would love to hear the gospel. They're so religious. But that person over there, all those tattoos, I've heard how he lives his life. He's not a real candidate, right? And we can't do that. This section really hits that pretty hard. We'll come back next week. I'm out of time. But this section here, of course, continues on down through verse 13. And he'll talk about the concept of mercy, judgment, and grace. And what kind of people are we going to be? Again, thank you all for being here, spending this time in Bible study. We'll dismiss here and come back and finish out this section and get on into another discussion about faith and faith and works and how they interact together.